again, my name is Annie Schmidt, and it is really nice to see so many familiar faces in this room. Many of you I know from my time with the United States Forest Service, some of you from my time with Chelan County Fire District 3 in Leavenworth. Yes, I've been a PIO on several of your teams, so that's why I may look familiar. And also, most recently, my work with Washington State Fire Adaptive Communities Learning Network. As Chuck mentioned, I am a member of the team that is working to facilitate the strategic planning process with the DNR, and I am really honored to be your facilitator for this afternoon's panel. The purpose of this panel is to really drill down into what's working well in our state's wildfire prevention, preparation, response, and recovery systems, and the key changes and resources that we need to improve our outcomes here in Washington State. Each panelist is going to offer their expertise and their perspectives, and will also try to bring forward some of the key themes that they heard in their table discussions. My role is to keep this conversation moving and focused, and I walked around the room, interrupting some of your conversations, to listen in on what was heard, and we'll try to bring forward some of the key themes that were presented in tables that did not have a facilitator that's present up at this table today. And as your facilitator, I think Jerry said it best earlier, we are gonna try really hard to remain neutral. And for those of you who know me, you understand what kind of challenge that might present, but I'm going to try. So we're going to have about 40, 45 minutes for discussion, and we're going to keep these responses short, brief, so that we have time to explore the breadth of this particular topic. And we'll move straight into closing remarks after this panel concludes. So at this point, we're going to ask each panelist, starting with Mr. Berndt, to quickly introduce themselves, give their affiliation, and their title.
Good afternoon. Is that working now?
Yes.
Where's Lute? So my name's Gary Berndt, and I actually retired from the Department of Natural Resources, and I've returned with the honor, I'm going to call it, to chair the Wildland Fire Advisory Committee that was appointed in 2015, and serve the Commissioner of Public Lands as a statewide wildland fire liaison for the last 2 years.
Good afternoon, I'm Jay McLaughlin. I'm the Executive Director of Mount Adams Resource Stewards, a community-based forestry organization down in Klickitat County, and wear a couple of other hats. Serve on the South Kiefer Pinchot Collaborative Group, and we also sponsor the South Mount Adams Fire Adaptive Community.
Thanks, Jay. Hi, I'm Lauren Maloney. My job title is Fire Mitigation Education Specialist. I actually work for two agencies. I work for the U.S. Forest Service and also for the Bureau of Land Management. I'm there in the state office, regional office down in Portland, and through that work, I have an opportunity to do a lot of collaborative work with communities, and it's really great to see so many familiar faces here this afternoon.
Hi, my name is Molly Linville, and I'm a cattle producer in Central Washington State in Douglas County. And I'm here today to represent the Washington Cattlemen's Association. And they've given me a little bit of free rein to be a little bit more interested in fire on rangelands versus timber grazing allotments. I unfortunately became one of your 3% this summer when we lost our entire ranch to a rangeland fire. And I know as I look around the room, many of you have had the unfortunate or misfortune of having me knock on your door and ask why and what are the solutions. So I'm really pleased to be here in hopes of getting some of those solutions.
Hello, Reese Lawley with the Nature Conservancy, Director of Forest Restoration and Firework in Washington. I have a few other hats as well in the sense of currently chair of the Washington Prescribed Fire Council, and also sit on the Washington Fire Adaptive Communities Learning Network and work closely with the Tubbush Sustainable Forest Collaborative.
Good afternoon. Randy Johnson, Fire Chief for Spokane County Fire District 4, which is North Spokane County. Also serve on the Wildland Fire Advisory Committee with Gary. Represent Northeast Washington on the Fire Defense Committee and serve as the Operations Section Chief on one of our incident management teams.
All right. We should also note that Kurt Vaughan was unable to join us this afternoon. He was scheduled to be a part of this panel representing Vaughan Brothers Lumber, some timber interests, as well as the Northeast Washington Forestry Coalition. So, first question. Thinking about your small group discussion, the panel we heard from earlier this afternoon, as well as your own experience and expertise, what's working well with respect to wildfire in Washington State right now? And not everybody needs to respond, no pressure.
Okay, what is working well? As the liaison, I've got the opportunity to attend a number of meetings, county fire chiefs meetings, public meetings, particularly after the 2014-2015 fire seasons, and issues that came up. And there was a lot of anxiety around particularly the northern tier counties and the east slopes of the Cascades during that time. And I've met with a lot of people, and I provided those inputs back to our advisory committee. In the first year, and we meet one day a month, 14 folks, broad representation from environmental tribes, a governmental agency, rangeland, a whole host of owners, of participants. And we came up with 16 recommendations that resulted, 16 issues, and about 50 recommendations for improvement, a lot of it based on the 2015. And what I'd offer after we provided that back to the commissioner and the department is there's been a real improvement, I think, in the amount of wildland fire training. Folks have been hired at local communities to work with the local communities. Cooperative efforts, and one that really sticks out is a legislative allowance for the department to provide their surplus engines as they're rotated out of service and make them available to fire districts. And I think last year there were 19 of those engines made available to various fire districts, and that's an ongoing program. And to keep it brief, I'll probably leave there. Our table, however, talked about partnerships with landowners, involving local citizens, interagency is better, and recognition and identification of local citizens and support.
Thank you. Anyone else want to tackle what's working well right now?
I would just say with my hat with the Washington Prescribed Fire Council, one, in thanking Representative Kretz with 2928, the Forest Resiliency Burning Pilot. I think in 2014, not so much, but in 2015, a lot of us said, wow, maybe our future does look different in the sense of we really need to look at what our approach is. A lot of the response component, it seems like in a lot of ways, right, we're 80% of the way there in the sense of how there's issues still, but in the sense of interagency cooperation and work, that's something the fire services have done for a long time. In the sense of kind of the before and after, it seems like there's a little more work. But in the last couple of years, I've seen a switch in the sense of we need to put fire to work for ourselves, right? How do we use fire in a productive manner to help reduce risk, to meet our goals and values? What we care about in this state. So I'm seeing tremendous progress that way. And, you know, we used to laugh, I think, 10 years ago. What do you mean put down as a strategy is change the culture of fire? That's a joke, right? but we're starting to see that shift, I think, and moving forward in the sense of recognizing the role of fire in a landscape and a place and how do we better live with it and be more proactive with it. So I am seeing a lot of progress there.
Randy, did you have a response as well?
So a couple of things. The training that Gary mentioned is hugely important, and the Department of Natural Resources leadership starting a couple of years ago for the training academies that go on around the state continue to improve our relationships on the fire line. So when we are together in May and June teaching, as we did at the Eastern Washington Academy the last 2 years, in excess of 500 new firefighters, or some firefighters getting some higher levels of training. And then within 3 to 4 weeks, some of those same folks are standing shoulder to shoulder on the fire line. They're not meeting each other for the first time, and that is a huge benefit to our response capability. So continuing to emphasize the early season training, the interagency academies that have gone on in this state, quite frankly, for nearly 30 years that I know of, but it's been a resurgence in the emphasis on that the last couple of years. And just in general, the cooperation and the partnerships that we have at the local level. As you hear the phrase, all politics are local, it applies to the firefighting as well. So the more we do together in that environment pre-season makes us that much more effective during the season.
Great.
Actually, I'll add, one other thing that came up at our table for those that were familiar with the Washington Fire Data, the Communities Learning Network, was just how powerful that has been for us in terms of those often that aren't necessarily with the fire services or the conservation districts, those that are doing outreach and knocking on doors before the fire season or sometimes dealing with the recovery process. There's just been an incredibly important venue for us to share information, to share successes with other communities, and get further the dialogue that hopefully brings about better outcomes. So that's been awesome.
Great. So now let's turn our attention to where the gaps are. Can we think of a few gaps? And we know there are many, right? But let's try to drill down onto the top two or three gaps with respect to preparedness, prevention, response, and recovery. Not three each, just considering the whole spectrum. Two or three gaps that are out there.
So I'll go ahead and start. My table's sitting right here, and just, will you guys wave at the rest of the room?
Oh my gosh. You managed that crew. Well done.
I really had a delightful time having my eyes open to some new perspectives this afternoon, and I think that is a big part of why we're all coming together. There sure are a lot of bugles sitting there, and we had a nice opportunity to talk about safe and efficient wildfire response in particular. Where did I want to go? Back up and ask the question for me one more time, because I got distracted
by two to three gaps across the board.
Okay.
Preparedness, prevention, response, recovery.
Okay, so we spent a good amount of time talking about policy and ways that we can work together better, and I swear I did not tee up this group. Someone else said, boy, we have some real gaps in wildfire prevention efforts, and I thought, yeah, I agree. As a person who... I'm contacted a lot about wildfire prevention, and there are not a lot of prevention professionals in place as there used to be. I think we've seen a real reduction in the amount of folks that are out there doing straight up wildfire prevention, doing an analysis of human-caused wildfires and how to target messages to address them. So that was highlighted in our group, and really one of the solutions that we just barely got to touch on is the advantage that wildfire prevention cooperatives bring, that in local areas, working together, structural and wildland firefighters cooperating on prevention, education, and outreach. And so that's a clear gap that we identified on our group.
Thanks. Anyone else want to talk about gaps?
So one of the conversations that I had, particularly with the state fire marshal, is in order to have a really valid program to either describe what the fire problem is or what's causing or how do we go about prevention, we have to have data. And there are over 500 fire districts in the state of Washington, DNR, 5 federal agencies. How do we gather? That's a gap that we have. And if we're going to, and now I'll switch to the personal, the fire that doesn't start doesn't cost. And yet, it isn't really always our focus, and maybe we need to concentrate on that. But when I heard that we need to have good data, how do we get a collection system? That may be a technology gap. I don't know how to do that, but something to worry about.
So we're here talking about the 5%, give or take, of the fires, largely, that eat our lunch, for lack of a better term, on each year. So we discussed this at the Wildfire Advisory Committee last week about the issue of proving the negative, whether it's prevention or the prepositioned resources that help with initial attack, the aviation assets that help with initial attack, and how do we do a better job of educating folks what the value of that is and how that impacted any particular incident and prevented it from becoming one of these 5% that we deal with. So we're taking some steps to try and figure out how do we articulate that with data, with some visuals that that we can put a little science behind and say, with our expertise, we're relatively certain that this particular incident was kept at this small acreage based upon these factors of initial attack and pre-positioned resources or things like that. So closing that gap and educating folks on the things that don't happen or the fires that don't get big is a piece that we need to do a better job of.
Another response to that question, Molly?
Yeah. At our table, so we had some tribal folks at our table, and it helped us to get a rolling conversation going about the fact that we're sort of the 1%. So farmers and ranchers and tribal members are 1% of the population, right? And so we already feel fairly marginalized in our lives. And so when fire resources are pulled away from us because there's so few of us and sent to, and I understand the logistics of it, but are sent to more populated areas, it just increases that feeling of marginalization. And I don't know if all of you are aware of it, but our rural communities are blinking out, like literally, or they are going away. And so fire fits into that, I believe, in the fact that I said something that seemed to surprise parts of our table, and I said, if at the beginning of our fire anybody would have said, do you want us to save your house or do you want us to save your rangeland? It wouldn't have taken me a second. I would have said save the rangeland because that's my livelihood, and I'm now out of business. And so, and the ranch has been in my husband's family for more than 100 years, right? So just the understanding of the fire services of the rural culture and the marginalized folks that live out in there, and what's important to us, and we feel just that understanding is a gap.
Thank you very much, Molly. I want to highlight a couple of other things at this juncture that I saw represented on flip charts, and that was also recognizing the limited English proficiency populations, some of members of our community who maybe don't communicate in a predominantly English language. And that was on at least two flip charts throughout this room. And so we just really wanted to recognize that group as well. Anyone else want to respond?
I do.
Reese.
So one of the things I heard that people liked what they heard in the sense of the vision was, how do we better educate? How do we better engage? And then the next piece is, right, how do we engage in a way in place, or in the sense of have people at the table, so we don't do this again and again, have these big gatherings and come up with a plan and feel like, oh, you know, where is it going? How are we making progress on this? And so part of that is what I heard was, these are complex problems. and you may take one piece and say, you know, it's not binary. It's not, this is the way to fix it. A rural fire protection association in one place might work really well. In another place, there might not be anybody who's going to stand up and do that, right, and come together. Or just that part of no man's land, right? So how do we better in Washington, in places, have those community discussions about personal responsibility, roles, and organization and place when it comes to wildfire? So how do we better have those conversations in the sense of, maybe that's how we educate, is engaging people in the sense of their role. How do we better convene and have those discussions and have people take personal responsibility through individual citizens to local government, you know, at those different layers and the different roles. So I think that's one area I'm hearing. We need a better way to convene at a local level and have those problem-solving discussions.
on this problem.
Can I add to that? So, just a little bit?
I even hate the terminology. We're in no man's land, which just... We need to deal with that, because especially on range fires, okay, it may be starting out in no man's land, but it's going to be in your urban interface in like 5 seconds, right? I mean, the night of our fire, 36,000 acres burned in less than 24 hours, and it was in Quincy, right? So so my neighbors, which I admit don't have a lot of neighbors, we were all like, okay, we're going to do something, and BLM came up and talked to us about forming a rural land fire protection, and BLM was so super supportive, ready to give us the training, ready to get us in PPE, ready to get us radios, all of the whole thing. And wait a second, we have to pass legislation in the state of Washington that says that we can do this, right? And also, I need to go back a little bit. First, we did, so a third of our ranch is in a fire district, and two-thirds of it is in no man's land. Didn't really help us because the whole thing burned. But the first thing we did do is ask our local fire district if they would annex us in, and they just simply said no. And so an RFPA was our next step. And so I've supported Representative Dent's House Bill 2562, and but we're getting pushed back because it's like fire services don't want. So we don't have it. We don't have any options. We're in no man's land, and fire services don't want to give us a Pulaski and Nomex, right? Because we're dangerous as citizen firefighters. So I think that's also a gap. Is that like pick either annex us in and protect us, or let us do it.
Thanks, Molly. So one of the things I wanted to drill down on, Reese actually had just brought up, which is that many of these table groups recognize the need for increasing engagement and collaboration and education at a very local level, at a community level. But on the same flip chart, those tables recognize the limitation in capacity at the local level to address those things. And so I'm wondering if you would offer your perspectives on what we can do to increase that capacity in our communities.
I would say first and foremost, you know, flexibility. And one of the frustrations from a community-based organization's perspective is some of the resources, some of the funding sources that come down the pike. They're kind of already cut and dried for certain programs that are out there that may not be available in our communities. For example, it was exciting for us to see in the capital budget. Well, it was exciting for us to see the capital budget passage, right? But then you see, you know, dollars that are directly allocated for Washington Conservation Corps crews, which, you know, our nearest crew is, what, 3 hours away from where we are. It's difficult for our partners to be able to access them for projects in our area. And that is why our organization, about a year ago, started a conversation to start our own local, what we call a cross-train stewardship crew that will be red carded, that will be chainsaw certified. We'll be able to go out and do some of the prescribed burn prep unit work, and do some of the fuels reduction work that needs to happen. Yet, you know, whether we'll ever have access to that kind of funding or not is going to be a challenge. It's going to be a hurdle for us. Boy, I keep going with this.
Keep going.
I'm happy to come back.
You have two more minutes.
Go.
I don't see the light yet.
Go, Jay, go.
You know, one of the things that's been probably most powerful for us has been ownership of our own land base. We actually are title holders to the Mount Adams Community Forest. It's several hundred acres. It's small. But we closed on the largest parcel that makes up that community forest ground in July of 2014. And in December of that same year, we were out there doing a forest health treatment that was generating revenues that we were able to plow back into the project. And within another 18 months, we were doing our first prescribed burn. This year, we're going into our third prescribed burn season. We've developed a cross-boundary relationship with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on a national wildlife refuge. And now we're up to touching on about 10,000 acres in terms of our project work in that area. So it's kind of this really exciting, empowering at the local level example of communities getting engaged with wildfire, with fuels reduction, with, you know, managing healthy forests, and we got to figure out how to replicate it.
anyone else want to respond to that community?
I'd like to. So I had the opportunity to work on building capacity, not at the local level where Jake gets to work, but I really focus on building capacity in Oregon and Washington because of my role working for the region and working with the Pacific Northwest Wildfire Group, with Pacific Northwest Wildfire Coordinating Group Communication Prevention Education Committee. We dedicate a lot of our time toward building capacity, and so some strategies that we've looked at from our level. First off, I'll just say the Washington Fire Adapted Community Learning Network is a capacity building tool, and the Bureau of Land Management initiated helped establish the Washington Fire Adapted Community Learning Network through an assistance agreement. So Bureau of Land Management has contributed community assistance funding to help establish and maintain the Washington Fire Adapted Learning Network, which has been this terrific formal and informal learning network where, you know, there are a number of WAFAC practitioners here in the room, and we reach out to each other. We ask each other questions. We help each other solve problems. And that network has been a real capacity builder here in Washington. Helps answer the question, too, what's working well in Washington. But then beyond that, just working on some of these other capacity builds, I get to work with fire prevention education teams. And Washington Department of Natural Resources used to sponsor independently a fire prevention education team program that really parallels our national fire prevention education teams. And I just want to offer up, I am an awesome partner to work with, BLM and the Forest Service. We will help you, Wadi and R. If you want to reestablish your fire prevention education team program, we can help you kind of get that going. We've got lots of people that we've been working on training the last few years. We've really built up our capacity with prevention education teams. And when you're in crisis, when you maybe don't have enough resources in your community, you can see a heavy-duty fire season potentially coming, and you're just looking for some help, these fire prevention education teams can come in and help provide some quick solutions and also some vision for some longer-term solutions locally. And so some of those tools really do help us to build capacity, and pretty exciting stuff, but I better not hog the mic.
Maybe I'll add just so the Nature Conservancy and the Forest Service has had a program for about 8 years called the Fire Learning Network. It's a national program, and that it's really been about sites across the nation in the sense of what are the issues that people, mostly land managers, the Fire Learning Network, in the sense of engaging fire, and what are the issues that land managers are grappling with. And so what we've learned through that and really sharing, how do we intentionally share and build relationships, right, between those networks in the sense of what's working, what's not working across the nation. And with that relationship also with the Forest Service and working with the Bureau of Land Management Interior, started the Fire Adapted Communities Learning Network. And so what we found there is really some pretty small amounts of money that where you provide some flexibility to local communities. You look at who's standing up in communities? Who cares in a community? Who's a spark plug? Who's engaging, convening people, right, and providing pretty small amounts of dollars for those people to move forward a plan, you know, annually to convene and work through problems and find solutions together. So, there's certainly an investment there, but it's a pretty small investment in the sense of
and the free. Free of charge, right here.
Well, and that's what you find, actually. But we've also found, right, if you don't have a convener, and I was really happy to see in the capital budget this year and working with the Department of Natural Resources some support for some of the forest collaboratives as well in the sense of the coordination component. So because, again, those forest collaboratives, right, are convening those different interests at the table and having discussions about issues and interests and coming to, like, what can we agree on and what are we going to disagree on and leave that aside? So I guess what I'm saying is small amounts of support and convening dollars can make a big difference in place. It has to go to people in the community who are standing up and say they have a problem and want to find a solution. But everybody has two jobs,
I'm actually out of a job right now. So.
Right. Well, you're here. You're not getting paid for it.
No, so, that's correct.
So in the sense of, right, a lot of people who are engaging in these issues, right, are not getting paid to do it. So having someone who can help convene and do some of the facilitation and those components help those other people come to the table. Yeah. So
can I do a quick one that comes to me?
Please.
I shouldn't get down to brass tacks, but just very briefly and quickly, I would love to see some sort of form of protocol in place for talking to the landowners during initial attack. Pre-season would be certainly more ideal. We have a lot of hazards out on our places. We may have convenient roads in. You need to know about those. And at our table, the safety of firefighters was a real concern. And so speaking to the landowners before initial attack and having that set in place before you go there so that you know who the landowner is and you know how to contact them, I know that's a big chore, but super important. An example would be we randomly have a 300-foot coal mine on our ranch that was dug in the 1800s. And, I was just delighted that a brush truck didn't end up in it. And so that sort of communication, and I know that's a micro communication, but I think that having some protocol on that would be excellent.
Gary?
So at our table, the Learning Network was unanimously agreed upon as one of the biggest assets, and I don't have that much background, and I asked how that is funded, and that's
grant funded.
It's not guaranteed funding. I guess it's really important if everybody at that table believes that that's a real asset. How do we motivate people? How do we fund and ensure that that's a growth program and not one that peaks and fades? And I learned a lot at our table. Thank you.
So one of the other things that I heard pretty consistently at a number of tables, and I'm curious as to your reflections on this, was that everyone was really encouraged by the panel discussion this morning, and particularly by the desire to break down these silos, to collaborate, and to communicate with each other. But there was a little bit of a fear expressed in multiple places that we've had this discussion before and that we need to translate these words into tangible actions on the ground. So I would put the question to you, what's needed? What is actually needed to make that transition so that we can increase trust and break down some of these silos that we're continually referencing?
So I guess I'd like to talk about a group that calls itself Quadco. And Quadco is at least four, if not more, counties in southeastern Washington that is working amongst itself for a mutual response for each other, planning to operate for 24 hours necessarily without outside support. They meet, and they may actually have ultimately seven counties that participate in that. Those are the kinds of things that break down. They did a large fire simulation. The power companies came, county commissioners, fire chiefs, federal and state agencies, and they spend a day together. And those have happened around the state. The Colville Forest usually sponsors one similar. Those are done with no stress, no incident, and people are wide open to participate. And I offer that those are ways we can begin to do that. That's in my travels that I see that.
Thanks, Gary. Randy?
So I was listening to the first panel a little bit and was making a few notes, and then some of our conversations at our table. We talk about changing the fire culture and the way we approach things, the way we do things. We've got some opportunities to change the culture within our cooperation and collaboration. I think at times we get hung up or worried about that we're giving up our responsibility if we're asking our neighbors for help, if we're asking other agencies or allowing other agencies to extend that help. Similar to the frustrations that Molly just articulated about her situation, it wasn't so many years ago that from a fire district or a fire service perspective, and we weren't as well accepted onto state and federal incidents as we are today. So we're replowing some of that ground, quite frankly. So we've got to continue to work towards understanding that we're not giving up our responsibilities when we invite our neighbors onto our property or onto our jurisdictions to help us. We're not giving up our identities. We're not looking to change our organizational culture necessarily. Those things, those values that are near and dear to us will remain. But we can still allow some other agencies, some other neighbors, some folks to engage in our jurisdiction and we shouldn't be worried about what that looks like outside of our world.
Anyone else have a response to that?
Well, I guess I can't help but wonder if reframing our expectations might be appropriate. And Cody's comments on the morning panel really, really resonated with me in terms of just kind of the power of Mother Nature. And I was really encouraged by the talk about engaging communities. And for me, maybe there's an even stronger word. It's like empowering communities. And so if you get back to what Cody's point, that you know maybe the fires, fire frequency, acres burned, et cetera, won't change within the next 20 or 30 years. How does that conversation shift when those fires happen, or when a prescribed fire gets out of control, if that community is empowered in the process of planning that fire or engaging with that fire? I think it's a really different conversation. And so I think, you know, putting ourselves in some slightly more uncomfortable situations, breaking down those silos, being willing to give a RFPA, a Pulaski, and turn them out on the range, those are the kinds of things we've got to be talking about. And it's going to change, maybe not an acres burned kind of outcome, but it could change how we're talking about this as a community.
Well, that actually is a perfect segue into what will probably be our last question. And we started the first panel today with, what does success look like? And I was so encouraged by so many of the visions that were laid out this morning, and I hope that you all were too. And then during the table discussion, I heard multiple people asking, well, how do we measure that success? So for the million-dollar question at the end of the day, how should we be measuring our success?
I'm probably not going to answer the question the way you're thinking, but I got something to put to it. And it does tie back to what Cody was talking about earlier as well. So I made a note about expectations when you were talking. And there's a quote that I've used, and for the life of me, I can't remember who I need to attribute it to right now. It was either a Lutheran theologian or a retired Marine commandant. So one of those two.
Same difference.
Either way, the quote goes, expectation drives preparation. We need to do a better job of setting expectations. We need to be more clear about what the community should expect. And that's the education component that was very key in the front of our discussion at our table. If we are doing a better job of setting expectations about what these communities should expect on an annual basis and starting that conversation now and continuing that conversation, not just when the smoke's in the air, but it's got to be all year long, year after year, until we start to bend that curve a little bit. And get folks to understand this is the expectation, this is the environment that you live in, you chose to live in this beautiful country, these are some of the components that come along with it. So setting realistic expectations so that folks can prepare for that inevitability and be ready to accept it when it happens. And I'll just throw in the other piece of this about transfer of risk. That's a pretty popular discussion in the response side of what we do in the fire service and wildland response as well. We are all involved in the transfer of risk. We talk about it on a wildland incident a lot of times as it pertains to having aviation resources do things that we don't want to put firefighters in a bad spot. So we transfer the risk to the pilots and the aviation assets. But I submit that we are all part of transferring risk to each other. As homeowners, where we build and how we choose to prepare our properties or not, we transfer risk to neighboring forests, whether they be state, federal, or private forests. As forest and large landowners, we transfer risk to the communities that surround us by the actions or inactions that we take. And ultimately, those risks get transferred to the folks that respond when the bell rings to one of these incidents. So I think we got to start looking at it from that transfer of risk on a landscape basis, not on an incident basis, not just when there's smoke in the air. Set the expectation and understand very clearly that what we lacked doing today will transfer that risk to somebody else down the road.
I guess I would say that, I would agree with Gary's comment, right, in the sense that, you know, a fire that doesn't start doesn't affect anybody and doesn't, right, cost anything. I think, though, what we're also seeing, though, is, right, even if we get, you know, I try to live by, most of my work, I can live by the 80-20 rule. You know, that last 20% takes a lot. Clearly, the last 4% is maybe impossible, really, in the sense if we look at the statistics and look at the predictions moving forward. So that leaves me, yes, we can do better there, I think, moving forward. But thinking about, in my mind, land management or resilient landscapes, thinking about communities engaged in living in a place that where there's fire risk, how they're engaged. And then, you know, ultimately, I think our culture is that the fire response organizations are the responsible parties. I mean, that's the way, you know, Smokey the Bear, all those different elements, is it's really the fire response it's on their shoulders, right? And so, in my mind, I think the more we can move towards, it is, I think, back to that, you know, what is our culture of fire? And how do we move that towards personal responsibility and living with fire, not passively, but actively? Actively taking personal responsibility in your role in living in a fire environment, right? Instead of putting it on the fire response organizations. They clearly are going to continue to have a huge role. And so then I think the other piece of success is, so how do we measure that personal responsibility component? And then I think the other piece too is, a lot of times in this collaboration and, you know, responsibility of different organizations, there's a fear that the pie is going to get, right, your part of the pie is going to get smaller. And there's a lot in this room in the sense of the ability, in the sense of a common vision of moving forward. And what I heard is it's never going to be as big as we want it, but there's a lot of opportunity with a collective voice to make that pie a lot bigger, to move towards solving the issues that we face around fire. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there around my element of thinking more about how do we measure personal responsibility in the state in the sense of roles of fire, and then how do we collectively work together in the sense of increasing that pie instead of thinking about how to split it up differently moving forward.
Okay, well, Lauren, we have time for one more response, and it's going to be Lauren.
All
she's
right.
Going to be brief.
Thank you. I will be brief. I have opportunity to measure many ways that we address wildfire. One of the most obvious ways is dollars, right? We measure how much we spend on wildfires, and we can sort of back our way into then what we've saved through wildfire prevention efforts. And that, so those are some of the measurements. We measure number of homes saved. We measure number of people reached through social media. Those are some of the easier things to measure. But it always gets a little bit off track. We always really kind of lose that vision. And I want to bring us back to what we heard as we opened up this afternoon, some of the visions set in the first panel. Something that resonated for our group here is we heard Hillary tell us that situational awareness and that community recognition, personal responsibility, like Reese was saying, is a really important value, and it is a way of measuring our success. And then we heard Jim Pena say that we'll be more successful when we see these activities happening year-round, year-round engagement, not just in fire season, but when we're communicating all year, training together, working together. And that's where we see success. It's harder to measure it, except when you look at just straight up, you know, reduction in wildfires, reduction in human-caused wildfires, those are there. But, you know, we really do want to keep our eye on the vision.
All right. Well, I've got the hook. I have to be responsible. I'm trying. This has been a really great panel. I wish I could give one more minute, but I cannot because someone will come and get me. He's already here. Thank you, everyone, the panelists, those of you at your tables, for participating in a very robust and meaningful discussion about wildfire and better wildfire outcomes across the state. We appreciate the opportunity to be a part of this process, and we're going to be collecting all of the notes, so your input will be carried forward in this process.
So let's give So we've got just a couple of things we want to close with. First of all, we're going to ask Lauren and Mark to come back up and kind of reflect on what they've heard today and how that's going to impact what we're trying to accomplish here over the next 6 months or so.
Well, I don't know that I need to spend a lot of time reflecting on what I felt. I think it was an outstanding session. I do appreciate you all coming and participating, and it looked like there was some really great participation as I walked around the various rooms. And so with that, I would kind of like to hear from you sort of high level. How do you react to this? Reflect back just really briefly. I know we haven't got a lot of time. What did you see as some real positive experience that came out of this, and maybe just a couple thoughts on how we should kind of go forward? Does anybody have any?
Yeah, I got something.
Okay.
If I may. Lauren, I came today, I brought this up when we started our group, I came today pretty much, I guess I was expecting or anticipating that I'd see the same old thing again.
The same old Lauren.
Same old, well, I didn't know you were going to but the same old approach to the same old problem. And we would have, as Bob Anderson used to say, we would have admired the problem and then all gone home. And that is not at all what I personally observed. I observed a group of people who have a new concern, a new sincerity, and a new thought process that they're looking at, and they've accepted the fact that this is not the same old fire season issue that we've learned to deal with over the last couple of decades. We're looking at a different monster here, yep. And we need to take a different approach, and we need to cooperate and communicate amongst ourselves to get there. That's what I saw. And
thank
I'm
you.
Very encouraged by it.
Thank you, sir.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Berglund, Fire Adapted Community of Hidden Valley Squaw in Kittitas County. And one of the things that I said in the opening part of our discussion at our table was that I wanted to see not only just across agencies, people working together, but I want to see bottom up, so that we're looking at top down agencies, talking to people, talking to homeowners, landowners. I also want to see bottom up, so that what I'm hearing, especially in this panel this afternoon, is all three ways, top down, sideways, bottom up. I think we need all of it. We need all of the participation, not just from agencies, but from groups, you know, that represent businesses and landowners as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. One more, and then I'll turn it over to Mark. Amy, I have a couple thoughts, too.
So I'm a school board director, and when I first came here, I was, what am I doing here? But now I know, because all that connection, and Russ and I are also on what's called the WASDA Trustland Task Force, which we're always concerned about the money coming to our buildings, and that's all part of all this discussion. So good work. Thank you.
Appreciate that very much.
Sure. I want to thank everybody for all the great participation. I've got pages of notes. If I was to summarize what I've taken in today, I've got at least 20 themes to go over. So our job is to put this into the plan ultimately and have you all continue to participate and continue to provide input to be solutions oriented and to help us get something that will last and help us do better in the future. So sort of to your theme of top-down, bottom-up, I have a little pyramid. How do we have leadership involved differently, the state and the agencies involved, and then the community level involvement? What do we need to do in each one of those levels? And in terms of how we put the plan together, there's a lot of ways we'll do that around the four areas and in other key themes. But, you know, what can we do now? What falls out that we can push forward now? What can we set up to do later? We're not going to solve everything and have every process worked out, but what do we put in place that then leads to those changes later? And then how do we create the compelling case? Really, we've heard a theme of resources, for the proactive approach, to stop being in the response mode, but to move into that other place. And how do we create that compelling case that I think all of you see and we've talked about today, so that we can ultimately have those resources come from all those levels, top, middle, and down, from the legislature, ultimately the federal government, from ourselves and our community. So we'll be looking at ways to do that and ways to create that kind of systems-level change that will give us a better outcomes. And as Cody said, you know, we're looking down the road 20, 30 years ultimately, but we're also looking at how we can make things better for people and measure that in the near term. So the plan will work on that. Appreciate your participation today in this convening and look forward to the next time we get together.
Thanks, Lauren. Thanks, Mark. So last speaker of the day, but before she comes up, I want to do something here. So PJ Tillman, I want to recognize her. She kind of had the lead in putting this thing together and making all the parts work today, and I think you did a great job. So thanks.
Good job.
So to close our session, we're going to ask Hillary to come back up and kind of reflect on what she's heard today.
Gary, I don't see enough of you. Down.
Thank you.
I have eyes and ears watching out for you. Thank you again. It's been an honor. I don't usually get to spend a whole day with a whole team and such a breadth of knowledge and experience and community members, top, bottom, and all in the middle as well. It's interesting. I'll just sort of close this out. Chuck, you started the day by saying you couldn't call me commissioner. And I'll just say, because this always helps, for those who don't know, and this may be an old story since I've already been here for a year, but on my desk, right when I came in office, I have a nameplate that's on my desk. And the nameplate says, "Do Epic Bleep." I've learned I can't say another word, so bleep. It says, "Do Epic Bleep." You know what bleep means, right? But we got a school director in the eye, so I got to be careful here. So the whole point of this nameplate is really to remind myself every single day that I have the unbelievable fortune to serve in a position to be able to serve the people in the state of Washington in a way that takes on some of the most significant challenges that our state faces. Everything from funding our schools to ensuring we're strengthening our local rural economies to helping make sure we are protecting the Puget Sound and all of our water bodies to our forest health, not only in the context of long-term forest sustainability for our state, but also in the context of how we're watching huge challenges in their condition, our agricultural lands, as well as this really significant challenge that you've all gathered here today, which is around wildfire. And the whole context around doing Epic Bleep is you got to really have three things, right? First, you got to have an epic problem, or as I see, an epic challenge, or most people who know me, I look pretty positively on the world, an epic opportunity. And that's what we have right here with the forest health issue and the wildfire. We have an epic opportunity where our state knows what's in front of us because we've already seen an image of it. And we have the resource and the capacity of the people here to tackle it because we're aware of it. The second thing we have to recognize is not one man or one woman can ever do Epic Bleep. The reality is it takes all of us. I love the context of top, bottom, bottom, up, and all the people in the middle. You know, as somebody who's worked very closely at the ground level as a local government official, I really truly believe it's the people on the ground in their community who's seeing the change in their landscape, who are seeing fire on the front line, whether it's Molly in the context of your farm and how front and center it was and what it meant for your family, not just today, but your ancestors who farmed that land, and what it means going into the future, whether it's the firefighters who every single day are putting themselves on the line to protect public life and safety, or whether it's the legislators who are needing to make really tough decisions about what they fund and when they fund it. It's going to take every single one of us, the knowledge, the experience, the expertise, our listening ability, our empathy, our compassion, our understanding, what side of the state we come from, and recognizing that the problems on the east side are owned by the west side, the problems on the west side are owned by the east side, we're all in it together. In addition to it, the third thing it needs, and this is where those who know me know well, is we have to have an end goal in mind. Anybody who knows me, I can't stand creating another piece of paper product that sits on a shelf. I love how you guys came to me, said, here's the 2007.
Six.
Oh, so close. 2006 strategic plan. No, you can correct me. My team knows. You better correct me, because I'd rather get it right than get it wrong. But we have a 2006 plan. They said, there's some good stuff in here. But there's a lot of stuff it doesn't have, which is that whole context of bringing the whole state in, right? But I don't need another plan that sits on a shelf. We as a state don't need another plan that sits on the shelf. I love, first of all, love meeting you on Jolly Mountain. Love watching your leadership. It was an honor. Thank you for serving us and our state and taking care of our community. I loved your point that said, I was ready for another meeting that was going to look a lot like the past, that raised some ideas, raised some problems. What are we going to do about it? And then we all disperse. Let me tell you, if you thought you were coming for a day and you could go home and enjoy the rest of your, not on my watch, not on my watch, because we're now all family doing Epic Bleep together, and I need all of you, we need all of you, this state needs all of you, and my goal here is we have a plan that means that we're going to stop being in front of the legislature and Congress and having zero in our budget for wildfire suppression. That is just wrong. That is wrong. And I will not let it happen, but I can't do it alone. I need us developing a plan that's at the ground level with every community member who's faced it on the front lines, who's fought it on the front lines, who goes back year after year and says, why? Why does it not change? Or how do we keep going without getting the critical resources we need in our community? And I'm ready to stand up and fight and raise this voice every single day with the legislature and Congress. The more we have a clear plan that says this was owned and prepared and created and invested in by this community, the more they will listen, and I'm ready to work with you to make that happen. So let's go do Epic Bleep together. Thank you.
So thanks, Hillary. So with that, we're done for the day. We thank you for your time.